You're listening to the Patriots All 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkchen.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Well, the Patriots have officially made a move at the wide receiver position that I think is a little bit more important to talk about, Adam Kirkchen, than Corey Coleman or Chad Hansen or whatever the other ones may have been. Was it 21 faces at this point in the Patriots locker room at the wide receiver position? But the guy that we're here to talk about today is Josh Gordon, the former Cleveland Browns wideout, former All-Pro, Pro Bowler. Quite the resume, but obviously we'll get to it. His off-field stuff is definitely a concern. But Adam, first, your reaction to just hearing that the Patriots were going to make this move?
Well, the way I look at it is when I heard about it, I was like, I couldn't really believe that they did it. But the more I think about it, it's one of those things. He's the former Brown, you know, former big-time pick, like a major producer when he's got everything together. And they didn't give up much, you know, it was a fifth rounder.
Yeah.
So like, I'm all for it. I don't know, you know, some people are against it, which is fine. But I feel like it's the ultimate high reward, low risk move, you know, where, you know, if he possibly, you know, puts it all together, which in a place like New England, it happens a lot. You know, especially the locker room culture. There's guys in there. There's a lot of leaders. You know, it's very cliche, right, at this point. But it is kind of true that, like, if a guy is going to make it with a certain amount of talent and, you know, see his potential, then it's with the Patriots. And with this guy's potential, it's like this guy's through the roof good if he's playing at his best, you know. So even if you can get just a couple games out of him like that, then it's worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is not the first time that Bill Belichick and the Patriots have taken a chance on a guy that has a little bit of a checkered past. I think this is probably the most extreme example of it. You know, guys like Albert Haynesworth or Randy Moss or Corey Dillon didn't quite have the red flags that this guy has just in terms of his mental health. So I think that this is probably the most extreme case of that, but certainly not the first time that they've kind of taken on a reclamation project of sorts. And I think that ultimately, what they saw on Sunday against Jacksonville was that they just did not have the talent on the perimeter at the receiver position that they're going to need to make this easier on Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels. You know, I said on Twitter that I stand by it. I think that they would have had enough if they didn't make this move to kind of make it work. But I think that they would have needed a lot, a very, very, very good postseason out of Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels calling plays and game planning for them to make a really strong push at a Super Bowl again with the talent, you know, that they have on the outside. So now you add Gordon, and I think that you're right. You know, a good regimented place like the Patriots, where you're not going to get away with some of the stuff that maybe he got away with in Cleveland. I know there's reports, Greg Bedard wrote about it today, about how in practice he wasn't always practicing hard. He wasn't always the best practice player. Well, that stuff doesn't fly in New England. You know, that stuff is something that the coaches are going to push him to do better and be better at. So that, along with the culture inside the locker room with the guys that they have in that room, a lot of great leaders, a lot of great personalities, a lot of great team first type guys. I think that they're going to really take Josh Gordon under their wing and take him in and really try to get him into a place where he can help this football team. So I think that all those things, you add that up, I mean, it's pretty hard move not to make. And I think that they kind of just saw it that way as, you know what, they just don't have the talent on the perimeter that they wanted. This guy brings that talent, and as long as they can, you know, get it out of him, then it's going to be a really great move for them.
Yeah, and I mean, just when you see what he can do on the field, it's, I mean, he can score from anywhere, basically. So
yeah,
that's an element that, I mean, I think a lot of people saw Patterson come in and think that he was going to bring that. Right now, he's not quite that you know, he hasn't put it together. Let's put it that way.
Right. I think that one interesting thing about Patterson, not to cut you off, is just that Brady said after the game on Sunday that he's great with the ball in his hands.
Right.
But that was what he said. You know, he's like, oh, Cordrell makes plays when we can get the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
He didn't say that he's a guy that's going to get open
right.
on his own in a route tree type deal. Right. So they're a lot of those swing screens and, you know, jet sweeps and stuff like that. He's great. But that's a gadget player. That's not a player that's going to get open and catch five or six passes downfield.
Yeah. And I think that's what Patriots fans sort of forgot when he came here. That's kind of what he's always been. Even going back to college, he's kind of been that player. He's hard to get the ball in his hands in traditional ways, but he is really exceptional when you're able to get the ball in his hands. But with Gordon, he's a better pure receiver, and he's got that same type of explosiveness. So that's what you're hoping you get. You know, for as much as you might get it or not, that's what you're hoping you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing, obviously, is, you know, this could last four or five weeks, and then all of a sudden, you know, he could relapse or something could happen. Even on, you know, in the facility, it doesn't necessarily need to be a relapse, just it could just not work out, you know, like all these other guys that they've gone through at the position just haven't worked out. Now, Gordon's obviously the most talented one out of all of them, but, you know, what's the difference between him and a guy like Corey Coleman or Eric Decker or any of these other guys that they brought in? Obviously much more talented player, but still kind of trying to jump into this thing midway through, you know, the program here where training camp and all that type of stuff has already passed. But I want to quickly talk about his role before we move on to what we were supposed to talk about today, which was the defense's struggles on Sunday. But I think that, you know, I've been kind of racking my brain to try to figure out a good comparison of a kind of a route tree for Gordon, and he is going to play X obviously on the outside on the perimeter. And the guy that I kind of came to is Brandon LaFell, you know, a go route guy, a fade route guy, digs, comebacks, maybe some screens. I don't think that he's going to be Brandon Cooks, you know. I don't think that he's going to be used in that same vein, but I definitely think that he's going to hold down that X receiver spot on the perimeter on the weak side of the formation most of the time.
Yeah, I agree. I do think he just presents such a dangerous option that they really lacked the other night.
Yeah.
You know, you could just see it. And I remember, you know, last week we talked about you're not going to see this offense really look smooth and clean this week because it was against the Jaguars and because of the circumstances, even though Burkhead did play and Sony Michel did play. Just the way I had a feeling, and I think we both agreed that it was going to be sort of a clunky offensive effort. And it really was, but adding somebody like Gordon into the mix, it really just changes things. Even if it makes defenses just have to respect him even a little bit more, opening up a little bit more space for Gronkowski, which, you know, yeah, as you saw against the Jaguars, they put so much attention on him. And I
think
there's a lot of – that's too much for just one guy when you don't have a second option right now. At the moment.
So. Yeah, the Jaguars defense, I mean, I went back this morning and just watched all of Gronkowski's pass routes just to kind of watch him specifically on the play and see what exactly that they did. They did a couple of different things. I mean, there were some scenarios where he just didn't beat man coverage, you know, press man coverage, and he just didn't beat it. But for the most part, what they did was, and I've seen teams do this a lot against the Patriots, is they dropped their two or three linebackers right back into the middle of the field, and they essentially made a wall right there over the cross, the hash marks. And when Gronk would run through that area, they would simply just pass him off one guy to the next until, you know, the play was over. And unfortunately, with the pass rush being what it was for Jacksonville, just being awesome, there wasn't a ton of time for Tom Brady to sit back there and wait for Gronk to kind of find a hole in the coverage. So he ended up having to dump the ball off elsewhere, get rid of the football, get the ball out. So I think that, you know, there were some missed opportunities, but a lot lot of them were later in the down where it really was a factor of the pass rush being there too quickly for Tom to kind of hold on to the ball and wait for Gronk to get downfield. So I think that they're Jaguars, you know, you got to give them a lot of credit, but really what they had two or three guys kind of, whether it was dedicated to Gronk or just kind of in his area where he just kind of had to run through multiple bodies, you know, that was all there. And I think that, you know, like you just said, Josh Gordon at least gives them a guy that other teams need to game plan for. The Jaguars were not game planning for Philip Dorsett. No. You know, they were not going out there and saying, you know, okay, like, you know, we got to shut down Philip Dorsett. They were like, no, like he's going to line up against one of our corners and we're going to rely on Bouye or Ramsey or DJ Hayden to just kind of cover him. And that's what happened. Chris Hogan, same kind of deal. So I think that they're really going to be happy to have a guy like Gordon. I almost think that after that game on Sunday when Tom Brady went up to the podium and he told, I think it was Scott Zolak, he basically said, yeah, you know, getting open on the perimeter is a work in progress right now. Yeah. And I think when he said that, it wasn't, I'm not saying he forced the Josh Gordon trade by any means, but that was one of those like Tom Brady bat signal type things to Bill Belichick. Like, you need to get me some more dudes on the outside because these guys that we have right now, even when Julian Edelman comes back, is just not going to be enough. It's just not going to be enough. It's going to be a grind. And I think that Tom Brady kind of insinuated that right now he feels like it's sometimes a grind for him to kind of find open receivers and get the ball out. And I think that's kind of where they went with this move. So as it's no coincidence that as soon as they lost that game to the Jaguars, Monday morning we all wake up and all of a sudden the Patriots are the team that are making the move for Josh Gordon. You know, they weren't really in those rumors to begin with. I think Rap Sheet or Schefter threw out that one AFC team was in the mix and then the other teams were NFC teams and that the Browns really wanted to trade him to the NFC. And then you wake up Monday morning or Monday afternoon and it's like Rapshi tweets that, you know, tweet out like it's basically done with the Patriots.
Right.
You know, there that's no coincidence. But I think we're all, you know, pretty excited to see Josh Gordon in here. It's kind of the first time. I mean, they had Cooks last year, so he's kind of in that similar, you know, really a really good wide receiver kind of group. But it's few and far between Cooks, Moss, you know, these types of guys to have a real game breaker like Josh Gordon on the team. It hasn't happened too often here over the last 20 years outside of, you know, Gronk, who's a tight end. So it doesn't, you know, not really the same kind of player. But let's move on to what we, you know, we're going to talk about today before this all happened. And that was the defensive struggles on Sunday. Kind of a disaster. Let's just be frank about it. 377 yards, almost 9 yards per attempt for Blake Bortles in that game. Looked like Joe Montana out there, not Blake Bortles. And it kind of reminded you a lot of the Super Bowl, right? Like making an average quarterback, like a Nick Foles or a Blake Bortles, look like an all-pro quarterback for four quarters.
Yeah. And as it was talked about a lot, already, but I mean, it looked like a lot of the same plays over and over again.
Yeah, I wrote about that today. Basically just kind of the core concepts that, you know, there's some things that you kind of have to just tip your cap, like the Keelan Cole catch, you know, like there's nothing you can do about that. Even his touchdown catch where he just burns by a row in cover one, it's like, you know, they just made some really great plays. You know, some of their guys on that and that team, I think the Patriots underestimated the outside receivers a little bit of the Jaguars, Cole specifically, and they burned them, but they just ran mesh. They ran flood routes over the middle of those shallow crossers. I mean, this was this was the Eagles game plan, and credit to Doug Marrone and that coaching staff for like identifying that and then actually calling it in the game. You know, I think that kind of gets like it should be easy, it should be a given every week that these teams are just going to do that, and it's not. You know, you kind of have to be very game plan specific to kind of go with that and continue to beat that drum.
Yeah, and it's something where I feel like it shouldn't be this successful over and over again.
That's the biggest issue.
Not this at this point. Like if they had adjusted in the second half and it wasn't as big of a problem, then you look at it, and even if they do lose that game, you think, okay, well, you know, at least there's progress here. I don't see any progress.
No.
And some of it is, you know, mental mistakes or just not scheming properly. I guess, you know, you have to be disciplined about passing guys off if you want to go that route. But I know against man coverage, it's lethal and there's almost nothing you can do. The other part also, which people have been complaining about, which has some merit, is that they just don't have good coverage linebackers. They just don't. And they haven't for a long time. And, you know, they could have done some things in recent drafts in terms of drafting a more of a new age type of linebacker, and they haven't gone that way. And so, you know, for as good as somebody is like Juwan Bentley is, you know, in a game like that, he's going to get exposed to, even though he has looked good against coverage in some places, spots this year. You know, this is just a team that defensively, and I don't even think the Jaguars, you know, and I think everybody would agree with this, I don't think the Jaguars can come close to some of the best offenses in the league that can execute those types of schemes. I mean, yeah. Not even close, you know. I like Bortles in this game and all that stuff, but I mean, is he, is he even like a Cam Newton or something? And with offenses like that, with skill players like that, with, there's so many teams that can hurt you this way. The Jaguars also just happen to be a team that also has an incredibly fast physical defense with pass rushers and good corners and coverage linebackers.
Just all three levels.
All three levels. I mean, speed everywhere. They can hit. And all they have to do, if you're taking candy from a baby like that on offense, you're not going to beat them.
Yeah. Oh, I think that, you know, going into this game, we both kind of said this. Getting off to a fast start was key for the Patriots. And I said it on Twitter. I was like, if this game script goes the same way that it did in the AFC title game where they get down, they're not going to win this game this time around. They're not going to come back. And that's exactly what happened. They tried to take the ball on the first possession of the game and score. They didn't get any points out of that drive. And that was a big kind of turning point in the game already really early on. But I think that the biggest thing is that they did drop two linebackers over the middle in Van Noy and Bentley a lot of the time, especially once they tried to adjust to some of the crossing stuff that they were doing, and it still really didn't matter all that much. Right. And when you have, you know, that's really the defense that you have to go with against these guys. You got to clog the middle, and they did try to clog the middle, and they still didn't have the team speed to keep up with it. So that is kind of the physical aspects of it that is, you know, very worrisome. I think that there was a lot to the fact that there was a lot of miscommunication and a lot of kind of scheme type stuff where it really surprised me the decisions that they made. They covered a lot of those bunch routes, those bunch concepts with man-to-man coverage, and guys were just losing leverage left and right because they were asking them to come across the field, you know, out of position essentially, instead of passing off dudes. I thought that was really surprising and something that they didn't adjust very much. So, you know, there was a lot of bunch sets where the outside receiver, the guy closest to the sideline, was going to run across the field, and he's outflanking already the dude lining up across from him just from being on, you know, in that position. And instead of passing it off to the corner on the inside and playing it inside out, they just kind of tried to run around everybody in the secondary and run through it. The big one to D.D. Westbrook was like a perfect example of that. You know, the guy, they pushed Gilmore out of the way downfield. You know, D.D. ran a little shallow crosser, and you see Jonathan Jones just stuck on the other side of the formation. And you're like, even if he has a free run across the field, even if Gilmore doesn't get in his way, he's outflanked. There's no, you know, he doesn't have leverage in that position. There's no way that he's going to catch a guy as fast as D.D. Westbrook is across the field when he's already a step or two, you know, behind him. So it's those types of things I think can be fixed. I think that the lack of communication, it was kind of similar in some respects to that Carolina game last year where they just had guys running wide open all over the field, and it was just kind of, it wasn't as bad as that, I wouldn't say, but it was similar. So I think there's that. But I think the one other thing I want to talk to you about that's a little bit underrated is that the lack of interior pass rush really cost them big time in this game. And I think that that's a big area where they've missed Trey Flowers, obviously. But yeah. I think that a big thing about it was, is you just watch these pockets for Blake Bortles, and he just has all the room in the world to step up in that pocket. And just when you got have a quarterback that isn't accurate, getting allowing him to set his feet and kind of get moving forward, his momentum, it allows him to drive the ball down the field and be more accurate with his passes downfield. And I think that that's a lot of the things that we saw too. Guys like Adam Butler, you know, Dietrich Wise rushed a lot in between the guards instead of Flowers because Flowers was out. Danny Shelton, Malcolm Brown, Lawrence Guy even. They just, there was nothing there, and they didn't really fire many A-clap blitzes either to try. They did a few of that, but not anywhere near enough to kind of generate a regular rush out of it. So I think that the lack of interior pressure is something that they need to address as well and try to get a little bit more of a push up front.
Yeah. I think it was funny because, you know, one of the things we talked about was, you know, was the week one pass rush a mirage because Houston's offensive line was so bad? You know, I wouldn't call it a mirage per se. You know, I think that's going a step too far. You know, losing Trey Flowers is a huge blow to that pass rush. I think everybody can agree with that. But, you know, the Jaguars lost their starting left tackle and a good one in Cam Robinson.
Yeah.
There was still nothing there, interior or on the edge. It just, I don't think Bortles was sacked at all, right?
I think they only hit him three times the entire game. I mean,
that is a flashback to however many years you want to go with, you know, these teams having a bad pass rush, especially at the beginning of the year. Going forward, I think you have good players there. I'm not, you know, I don't think that, I don't think like Lawrence Guy is a bad player. I don't think Malcolm Brown is a bad player. I think you've got good players there. But you can't play like that against any quarterback. And if you're going to play like that against a guy like Bortles, who, like you said, is allowed to set his feet all day with open receivers, you're just going to lose every single time.
Yeah. And they were really lucky. They kind of turned things around in the second half a little bit defensively, and they had those turnovers, which was huge. But the Jaguars could have easily scored 40 points in this game.
Easily.
You know, it looked like at one point in the first half, the Patriots were going to get run off the field, like, badly. You know, not like something worse than we've seen out of, like, that Kansas City game in 2014 or even the Kansas City game last year or anything like that. It looked like for a while there, like, this could have been, like, a 41-10, you know, smackdown. And luckily the Patriots were able to kind of figure some things out on both sides of the ball and at least put together a fight and kind of get competitive in this game. And it got tense in the stadium. You know, you kind of could feel the momentum shifting after that fumble, you know, the Stephon Gilmore strip. Everyone, the Jaguars media in the press box, the fans in the stands, you could feel that they kind of were having nightmares of the AFC Championship game where they dominated the game for three quarters. And then, you know, Tom Brady brought the Patriots back and had, you know, some Brady magic. It wasn't meant to be this time, but I think that, you know, we've kind of hit the nail on the head where it's just, this is just over and over again that this type of offense, these horizontal speedy receivers, guys crossing over the middle of the field, getting into foot races with the Patriots defense, you know, defense back seven of the Patriots defense, and then the pass rush. I mean, it was kind of surprising to me that they actually pressured Blake Bortles on 19 of his dropbacks. When I saw that on Pro Football Focus, I like actually messaged my guy Louis Benjamin and was like, is this right? Like, are you guys sure that you did this correctly? And he was like, yeah, like they pressured them, they hurried him 21 times. You know, some of those are on the same play, and they hurried him 21 times, but nobody came close to actually touching him. So, you know, and that kind of reminded me a lot of the Super Bowl, because you remember a couple of the key instances in that game where they were really close to getting to Nick Foles and it just wasn't quick enough. You know, it was just that half a second too slow, and that's kind of how it felt like in this game too. But before we sign off, I wanted to just kind of hit some things that we thought that maybe they could do to kind of fix it. Maybe not scheme-wise, but I think that there's a couple guys that I would like to see play on Sunday night, Derek Rivers being one, and J.C. Jackson, the cornerback, being the other, because right now, let's be honest, Eric Rowe is just not getting the job done opposite of Gilmore.
Right, and I don't know if there is anybody actually who's an answer, like a terrific answer right now. I mean, Jackson maybe, Crossen maybe, I don't know. I don't know I don't know exactly if they've got a number two corner who can really, you know, do like a semi shutdown job. You know what I mean?
I think that the thing that was weird about it was that they really trusted him to just take Keelan Cole one on one. I'm talking about Eric Rowe. They really, a lot of people are like, well, he had safety help. No, he had a single high safety, right? There was a safety in the middle of the field. That's different than having safety help. Safety help would be if they're playing cover two, or if that safety is shading his way over to Rowe's side, or if they're bracketing the guy, but they weren't. They were just Eric Rowe versus Keelan Cole one-on-one, who's going to win. And Cole was just a better player.
Yeah. I agree. And I don't know if there's like some of these issues on defense. I feel like I don't know if they have the guys for it. You know what I mean? Like you have to pass guys off in coverage with the linebackers, because they're just not physically equipped. Like, I don't think you can play man coverage on some of these mesh routes and crossers and stuff. I just don't think you can do it. So
no, I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. So, you know, you just don't have those guys. You don't have those guys. So I think you hitting on Derek Rivers is big. I think I'd like to see him and see what he does in a game like any game, really. But
he's got to offer them more than what Keontae Davis and Geno Grissom have offered him.
Yeah, if he's not better than Keontae Davis, I'd be worried.
Terms of bust potential with that one.
Nothing against Keontae there, but I feel like Derek Rivers should be better than him. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, we won't know exactly. I know we're not going to get into the Lions preview, but I don't know if we're going to know exactly how much this has been fixed for a little bit.
The Lions scare me, man. They have all the kind of pieces to do the exact same thing. If Jim Bob Cooter and those guys are smart enough to send Golden Tate and Theo Riddick and Marv Jones on all these types of routes that the Jaguars just ran on Sunday, I mean, those guys, Golden Tate's a better receiver than a lot of the guys that the Jaguars just marched out there.
Yeah, I agree. I just feel like, man, if they let the Lions do that, then you're really hitting the panic button.
I mean, I think that a big thing with it is that the Jaguars, you got to tip their cap to their execution. You know, at the end of the day, like, you got to go out, you can game plan and scheme all you want as a coaching staff, but the players have to go out there and do it and execute. And the Jaguars were just perfect for most of the day with the execution. I don't know if the Lions have that kind of attention to detail and that kind of focus to be able to do that. But just on paper with the skill players that they have, I mean, I'm taking Marv Jones and Golden Tate over Dede Westbrook and Keelan Cole. No offense to Dede and Keelan Cole. I think they're good players. I just think that those guys are better. And Derek Rivers is, you know, someone I really would like to see. I think that they need somebody that can beat a tackle one-on-one that isn't Trey Flowers. You know, somebody that can really put a pass rush move on a guy and get around. Adrian Claiborne is supposed to be that guy, but he has just been horrible at setting the edge against these mobile quarterbacks, and he's just blowing right by the QB in the pocket, and it's really demoted him to basically being a spot pass rusher, kind of situational pass rusher, and not a guy that's going to, you know, play 40, 50 snaps a game and really be able to get something good going because he just can't keep contained on the outside, on the edge, and he just, three or four times against the Jaguars, he just went right past Blake Bortles and allowed him to step up and move up in the pocket, and that's just going to get you in the doghouse with Bill Belichick, you know, every single day of the week. So I'd like to see Rivers. And the last one before we go is I just wanted to hit on maybe moving Dante Hightower back to more of an edge rusher role instead of playing him off ball linebacker so much.
Yeah, I think at this point that would be like his I think that would be very effective for him. I think he can do that at a high level still, especially given, you know, what the pass rush looked like last week without Trey Flowers. If you can put somebody like Dante on the edge and have him go at guys, I still think he's a dangerous guy, and I think he'd flourish in that role. I think that's a good suggestion.
Too many plays with Dante Hightower 10 yards off the line of scrimmage in space trying to cover running backs and stuff like that. That's just never been his game. You know, even a lot of people on Twitter are like, he ran a 4.7 coming out of Alabama. That was in 2010. You know, like that, you know, whenever it was, like that was a long time ago. You know, this is a different player now. He's always been a collision guy, right? He's always been in a phone booth, taking on blockers, pushing the pocket with the bull rush, getting around the edge on occasion, blitzing up the A-gap, playing close to the line of scrimmage. The weak side line, the guys that they've allowed to run around and stuff, that's Kyle Van Noy, that's Jamie Collins. Those are the guys that are playing, you know, really far off the ball and off the line of scrimmage. Hightower, to me, has always been a guy that takes on blockers and is going to bring, you know, the game to the opposition and really come forward more than he's going to go backwards.
Yeah. I think that would just be – I think that would come close to – just being a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, I think you know, like it is every year, they learn more and more about their team in these first four games. And then, you know, they make, you know, rotation adjustments and scheme adjustments and stuff like that based off that. And I'm, you know, even though, you know, that was a bad looking loss in some respects, you know, the Jaguars are a good team. It was the second game of the year. It's a long way to the end of the year, you know. So I expected them to lose at least one of these first four games. And I don't think it's a terrible thing to lose to a team that's that good.
That was their Super Bowl down there. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. There's no explaining it any other way for the fans, for the media, for the team. I mean, there's players in the locker room post game. Calais Campbell, I think, said it felt like they won the Super Bowl after they won that game. You know, it was a week two Super Bowl. It was a 4:15, 4:25 kickoff for the whole world was watching. Jacksonville has not had that kind of game in a long time where they have a really big game against a, you know, team like the Patriots in the game of the week in that time slot on a Sunday. It doesn't happen very often for them down there. So I think that this was a huge deal for the city and for the team. And they played like it. You know, they played like the hungrier team. They played like the team that it meant more to them to win that game than it did the Patriots. So I think that come January, that kind of thing is not going to happen again, where, you know, it just means a lot more to one side than it does to the other. And one side's, you know, just way more energetic with their play. All right. What do you got going on this week? And we'll be back on Thursday, obviously, to preview the Lions. But what's going on with Mass Varsity?
Just a lot of college and high school stuff, same as usual. I'm hoping to talk to Holy Cross coach Bob Chesney tomorrow. We'll see. He had a huge win this weekend. They beat Yale in overtime after falling behind 21-0 in the first quarter. He's just going to do great things there, and he's an excellent young coach. And then I'm going to go to some high school games this week. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it to a college one, because on Saturday, when I usually go to a college game, I'm going to see an ISL game between BB&N and Lawrence, which has a lot of talent on the field. Again, that guy I was telling you about earlier, Zach Zinner from BB&N, just picked up an Ohio State offer. Lawrence is always talented. So BB&N also has that kid who was offered from Michigan when he was still an eighth grader. So that'll be fun. And, you know, we'll just keep an eye on how BC does against Purdue as well. The ranked BC Eagles. Purdue's 0-3, but all three games they could have won. And Purdue has a guy that you should keep an eye out, everybody, for the next 3 years, a true freshman named Rondell Moore. And in his first game at Purdue, he set the all-purpose yardage record in his first game at Purdue. Oh, wow. for the school, for the program, not ever. But yeah, it's still pretty impressive. He's a small kid, but he's just lightning in a bottle. So yeah, a lot of good college and high school stuff coming up.
Yeah, Purdue, the Juwan Bentleys is what you mean by Purdue. That's who I think of nowadays. Roosevelt Colvin also went to Purdue. I didn't know that. Another expat that went there. Cool. All right. So on CLNSmedia.com, check out my film review of the defense, a little bit more detail about what happened there on Sunday. Josh Gordon piece is also up, so check that out too. And then on Thursday, I think we can tease it. We have Kevin Duffy, Mr. Boston Herald, coming on the show with us to preview the Lions and Matt Patricia and all those good things and bad things about Detroit.
This will be what, his third time, fourth time on the show?
Yeah, I think he might be the most reoccurring guest.
Are we going to give him like a special jacket and a cigar for, you know?
Yeah. We got to have something special for him. Cool. All right. So we'll get Duffy on the show on Thursday and we'll preview the Lions. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.